You're listening to KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, and KFCF in Fresno. This is Crackle Dawn. I'm Barb, and my wonderful guest this morning is a composer, a radio maven, and God knows what else, Carl Stone. Hello, Carl. Wake up.
I'm awake.
Yeah, I just did that to bug him, but let's listen to something of Carl's immediately. Well, I'm more awake now. Why can't I hear myself? Well, I guess something with my...
I hear you fine.
Oh, okay. No, I just turned up my headphone mic a little more. So...
Hi, Barbara.
Hey, Carl. So what's the name of that? He told me what... Oh, sorry. Yes. Well, I'm more awake now. Why can't I hear myself? Well, I guess something with my...
I hear you fine.
Oh, okay. No, I just turned up my headphone mic a little more. So...
Hi, Barbara.
Hey, Carl. So what's the name of that? He told me what... Oh, sorry about that. You did tell me the name of it, but I... It went in one ear and out the other.
It's called Dongiljang.
And that's Korean for?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what it means. You know, I have this really stupid habit of naming all my pieces after restaurants. And Dongiljang is a Korean restaurant of some repute. And pretty good one. I think... I know the il in Dongiljang means one, and I think it's something like number one island or something like that.
You know, my passwords, not that I'll tell you what they are, but some of my passwords for my email address are usually places I've stayed in Southeast Asia. Different lodges and bungalows.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what I do.
Well, maybe your travel agent's going to be cracking your account later. You know, it's probably the only person who knows.
My travel agent don't book me in places like that. You know, I'll stay in the travel agent place one night and then walk around and find the $8 place the next day for the next month.
Oh, yeah.
And that's hang out there, you know.
I stayed in this great, it was a little more than, it was like $12 a night on the Chao Phraya River in Bangkok. That was pretty nice. For $12, you got a room, large room, and free laundry. I thought it was a great deal.
Did you get your breakfast, too?
No, they had sort of a kitchen in there, and they would cook stuff up. You know, you come in and say, well, I feel like having some pad see ew or something like that,
and
they'd cook it up.
Love it. The only thing I need with any place I'm at, I guess we strike a deal at all times, is I just have to have the coffee in the morning. I don't care if it comes with it or doesn't, you know, but that's the, I was telling someone that yesterday. We were taking a long hike, and I said, that's the only thing I have to have. He said, are you addicted to anything? And I said, I tried to think, what am I really addicted to? And it's caffeine.
So where do you go, like, if you're in Bangkok or something, and you want to get coffee anywhere, you have to go to, like, a hotel, or is there, I mean, I don't remember running across any
I wasn't cafes. Even in Bangkok, but when I stay at little places, like, in, I've been to Nepal, and I've been to Bali and Java, and I just talked to the people that on the place. I said, can I get coffee in the morning with whatever, but mainly can I get coffee in the morning? And it seems like everywhere in the world there's really good coffee.
You don't have to bring along your own freeze-dried taster's choice.
Makes me sick to think of that. So that was so rhythmic and sonorous. I mean, using all that digital, right?
It was done. This is a piece from 1982, actually. So it's sort of pre-MIDI, pre-sampling. I mean, sampling was around then, but it wasn't really affordable. It certainly wasn't affordable by me. And that piece was done using just a stack of records and a turntable and a stereo digital delay. I did a number of pieces using this stereo digital delay made by a French company called Publisson in the early 80s, and I sort of did a bunch until it got stolen from me out of my house.
So what were some of the sources of that? I noticed that there were some, seemed like there were some songs and...
Yeah, it's basically done with, trying to remember what I used for that particular version for that recording. It starts out with my voice, and then it goes into some music from Okinawa, and that sort of gets bifurcated and interrupted by Renaissance music. And then the last thing that you hear, like the last 3 minutes or so, is all Smokey Robinson, actually. A little Motown.
Yeah, that's always good for a finale of that type.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we going to listen to now?
Ooh.
By the way, let me tell you that, just if you weren't here at the very top of the show, this is Crack O' Dawn. Carl Stone is my guest. And basically, he's going to be playing... a lot of unreleased stuff, right? Things that we haven't been hearing around town. So I'm really looking forward to this. So what's going on next?
Maybe something else from that around that same period, done with the same technology, but a little bit different, sort of in the way, kind of the velocity and the energy of it. But it actually is all done using Motown.
Oh, good, okay.
It's Motown from beginning to end, and this thing is completely unreleasable. This will never see the light of day in your record bin, as far as I can tell, because it's just, it would be like a copyright nightmare.
So will you dump it in?
It's there on the CD
there.
You've got. Yeah, it should be cut.
I was going to try to get him to do things.
I could do that maybe later, but let's see. You got the cover for that? Because I'm trying to remember where it's, it's the piece called Shibucho.
I think you have the cover.
Oh.
Just a minute. Yeah, I have the cover.
Yeah.
I have the cover. So let's get that on.
It's number one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just before we start, so that I don't forget, I just have to tell them about the Hotel Utah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, please come to the Hotel Utah, because Wig Band is having a record release party of Lick Me to Heaven is the latest CD. And Wig Band is myself and Johanna Pothig. And Todd Manley and Chris Brown are playing with us, and we're going to sing three cuts from the CD. I always want to say from the album.
Yes.
Anyway, so come and have a drink.
What time does that start?
It starts at 8 o'clock on Tuesday night. August the 6th.
Should be fun.
It would be nice to receive the CD in the mail, but we won't discuss that too much. Okay, so we're going to be hearing now, and Hotel Utah is 4th and Bryant, the city. That's all you have to know.
What city is that, Barbara?
The city of San Francisco.
Oh.
Thank you, Carl. It's so great having a radio personality as my guest. It just keeps me really on my toes. Tell us the name of this again.
It's called Shibucho, 1984.
Go, Mikey. Neat. So, yeah, obviously, like you said, that cannot be released.
Yeah, I think that one is
pushing the envelope.
Yeah, destined for...
home entertainment.
Yeah. And I do mean home. That's from 1984.
That's called Shibucho.
Shibucho.
Shibucho. Mm-hmm. And was that another restaurant?
That is another restaurant, as they all are, in fact.
In Korea?
No, that's a, it's a Japanese, it's a sushi bar in Los Angeles, for what that's worth.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite sushi place here?
I haven't made an extensive survey. A lot of people have tatted me on to this place or that place or whatever. I've had a couple of near hits and near misses. In fact, I'd be willing to entertain, if anyone wants to call up with their recommendations for anything in San Francisco, I'd like to hear from them. But
Oakland will do it, or Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
848-4425.
I've been to a place called Kabuto in the city that's pretty good. Sort of local. I live in the kind of Bernal Heights, Noe Valley area, and there's a place called Hamano Sushi that's... The sushi is okay. The service is kind of... they just sort of throw the stuff at you when you sit down. I don't like that. But
have you been to California Sushi, which is right a hole in the wall, like right on Martin Luther King and University?
No, I don't think I've ever.
Why am I pointing there?
I don't know. It's over there.
I think I was in the old. I was like being in the old studio and pointing there, but really, it's there.
I don't think I've ever. I've never had sushi on in the East Bay.
Well, I was sitting at my desk at work, and I just was idly opening drawers looking for where the people, where other receptionists hide their candy and their chocolate and their cookies. And I saw instead what receptionists do. Instead of eat, they read recipe magazines and they read restaurant reviews. So this was a review of a place on College,
mm-hmm.
right near the Lucky Store, like must be near Claremont, sort of, but it mm-hmm. sounded fabulous, and I forget the name.
Sushi bar?
Yeah.
Not was it Tachibana?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of that. I've passed it many times, and I once ran into Stephen Hill, the producer of Hearts of Space, right outside. I said, Stephen, what are you doing here? And he says, I came all the way over from San Francisco to eat at Tachibana.
See, I have to check that out, because it's my neighbor. You know, I mean, I live in Berkeley,
yeah.
So I have to check that out.
Yeah.
So where do you... do all your work, like in your, you have a studio at home?
Yeah, modest studio set up in my house, sort of based around a Macintosh computer. I have a couple Macs, actually, and hard disk recording system, and MIDI studio, which is based around a small sampler and a couple other gizmos.
So do you compose every day? Do you work every day on music?
I try to, but I can't do it every day. I try to, you know, get in. I'm in addition to composing, I'm now working with like QuickTime movies and animation, things like that. So I try to, you know, do something or another every day. It might not necessarily be music.
Right, but yeah.
Some creative something.
So you said this Camilla Bar, mm-hmm. this CD, which is a beautiful sort of cover, which is a collage. He asked me first, it's a loaded question,
because yes,
he
right.
asked me if I liked it, which
you,
I do.
Do you like the cover, Barbara?
Which I intensely like, but then he told me that he did it. So I didn't realize that you're a visual artist, too, and filmmaker. And
well, no, I'm not a filmmaker. I just fool around with QuickTime uh-huh. animation and video stuff. And I, you know, I'm still rather dilettante-ish, I must say. I've only been hatching around for a couple of years, but it's interesting to try to see about how to express some of my ideas in a completely different medium, visual medium, which I've never worked with. I don't consider myself to be a particularly acute visual person, but I sort of like, you know, playing with time in just a completely different dimension than sound. So.
Yeah, sometimes there's a curiously satisfying thing about being able to realize one's, you know, creative and artistic fantasies and then realize them in a visual way once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's very satisfying, I think, you know, to move around in the media, even though, you know, one is primarily, like in your case, you're primarily a composer. But it's it is nice to dabble and be a little bit dilettante-ish in a way, because I think it can give you some sort of... feeling for when you go back to the music, it's like something's gelled or something's.
Oh yeah, no, it's taught me a lot about music just by working yeah. outside of music. It's taught me a lot about my sound, in fact.
So how long have you been a composer? Would you say?
Well, that depends. I mean, I wrote my first piece when I was 5. Which was just a C major chord repeated over and over again for about 5 minutes, rather avant-garde work.
Yeah, for a 5-year-old.
For a 5-year-old. And I had absolutely no inkling of the Stockhausen Klavierstück 9, but nevertheless, there I was. I don't know, that was sort of one of the early peaks in my career, and I didn't really do much composing. I studied piano and played piano and kind of classically trained, but for composing, I guess I worked, it's kind of in a rock and roll group, but we weren't doing rock and roll so much as kind of Western improvisational music, with maybe fashioned after ensembles like Captain Beefheart or the Soft Machine or groups like that. And this was when I was in high school.
And where was that?
In the Los Angeles area. And one of my bandmates was a person who later moved up here to the Bay Area, a guy by the name of Zev,
who
some people may know.
Sure.
And then went to Amsterdam and is now back in Los Angeles. And he was doing drums and percussion and so on. And I was doing electric keyboard. And I guess improvisation being sort of real-time composition, I guess you could say that that's sort of when I started. But I didn't really call myself, I didn't think that this is what I was going to do as a livelihood, say, until until after I finished CalArts. And that was like 70, 75 is when I finished CalArts.
Were you there when Michael Byron was there?
Yes. Yes, I was.
Michael was one of my boyfriends over the years.
When you were in Toronto?
No, after I'd come out here.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and I met him and I thought, ridiculous, this will never happen. But then he, I don't know, he pulled my hair or something, and the rest was kind of history.
Dipped your pigtails in ink.
He's, yeah, a lot of fun, very rowdy boy.
Well, where is he now?
He's in New York.
Oh, yes.
And he's actually starting to compose again.
Well, that's good. Yeah. He really, really dropped, you know, far out for a long time.
Oh, yeah, he did, too. So was, who else was Willie Winant there?
Willie Winant was around, yes. He was even younger and
more
obnoxious.
More crazy.
He was great, though. Richard Teitelbaum was on the scene. Charlemagne Palestine, Ingram Marshall was there. Not Human was on the scene in the first couple of years while I was at CalArts. He was not known as Not Human at that time.
What's his real name? Are we allowed to tell?
You know, I don't know if I feel like I'd be breaking a sacred trust.
I think I knew at one point, but never mind.
I'll tell you off the air.
Okay.
Let's see, who else was around? I mean, it was really Randy Cohen, some people may know. Serge Trepnin, the inventor of the Serge synthesizer, was on the faculty there. And that was the period where he first started to develop, you know, his ideas and make his designs for the Serge. It was a really good group. I was very young. I mean, I was like the youngest kid around, and so I was to a certain degree star and awestruck. Not only by the people and the personalities there, but just by this just incredible amount of equipment, which, if I was willing to work from midnight to 6 a.m. or all throughout the weekends, you know, it was completely under my control for basically as much as I wanted. Mm-hmm. And that was a great experience. Mm-hmm. That was absolutely terrific.
So, let's listen to some music, yeah.
Okay.
But when the music is on, give us a call at 848-4425, area code 510, 848-4425. Tell us about sushi places, or you can talk to Carl, you can talk to me. I think before we listen to something, I bet, and before you all fall asleep, I think we better quickly go through a couple of things that are happening, and then we'll keep doing this, because I don't feel like doing it all at once today. There's just too much stuff. But Sunday night, the 4th at Beanbender's, Room is playing, which is Larry Oakes on saxophone, the aforementioned Willie Winant, percussion, and Chris Brown, keyboards and electronics. And Beanbender's is on Shattuck, 2295 Shattuck in Berkeley. And that is Sunday at blah, 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 blah. Well, I don't know what time. 8 o'clock, I guess. 8 and 9 are two sets, I suppose.
Most people will be staying home and listening to Ears Wide Open, the program.
Oh, that's
that
right, the Carl Stone Show. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was going to ask you if I could drop in for a moment.
Oh,
and
sure.
I won't do the same thing, but, you know, just talk about my upcoming.
Your upcoming thing, which is on Tuesday?
Yeah, that's Tuesday.
And that's at the Hotel Utah.
That's at the Utah.
4th and Bryant.
And let's see what else is happening. Well, I just...
stuff going on. Maybe you'll mention it later, but you know this place, Venue 9 in San Francisco? It's kind of emerged as an important venue.
Yeah, it's a great place. The 7th is Lyle Ellis, Chris Brown, Phil Gelb, Shakuhachi. Venue 9 is on 9th, right at Folsom, 252 9th. And the shows are mostly Wednesdays, I guess.
Yeah.
There's a couple of, it's Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. Tuesday is at Dark Circle Lounge. That's at the Utah 930s. 9:30 on Tuesdays. You know, you should email Dan Plonzi. Just Plonzi at astro.berkeley.edu, and you can get this calendar. This it's fat, you know, mm-hmm. excellent venues mm-hmm. here and all the varieties.
Oh yeah.
Do go to Yoshi's. It's just truly a wonderful atmosphere and wonderful place. That's at 6030 Claremont. We'll talk more about this later. Hmm. What are we going to hear? Should we hear Cut 3?
Yeah, Cut 3, a piece called Sukhothai. This is sort of from my post-CalArts period. This is 1979. This is even earlier than the other pieces. And this is different from those in that this is all done with just two tape recorders and a record player. And it's basically the technique I used is making a recording from a disc from the KPFK, Los Angeles Library, Music Library. I dubbed it onto the left channel of a tape recorder and then went back and dubbed it on the right channel. You know this piece?
No, that's what I used to do. That's how I used to do it.
Okay. So then...
And then play it.
Then I mix those two and then dub the two onto the left channel of another tape recorder and then you do the same thing. Okay,
that's
great.
What I did. That's
so then I had four and then I took the four and mixed them down and it just kept going back and forth until I built it up to 1,024 tracks. And that's what you hear in the course of this piece. You just hear it progress from 1 to 2 to 4 to 8 to 16 to 32 all the way up to 1,024. And so it's sort of the systematic you know, revelation, presentation, what have you. And that's it. I mean, it's very exposed, both in terms of what the material is and what the form is. It's not too much you can say about it. It's just sort of what it is.
So you're listening to KPFA, KPFB Berkeley, KFCF Fresno, and you're going to hear Carl Stone's Sukhothai. Wow.
If I had to do it all over again, I'd probably not do the cutesy ending, but there you are, 1979.
Yeah. I love it. So what is that piece anyway? Some Bach? What? Bach?
No, the original material is the Rondo from Abdelazer by Henry Purcell. Oh. And that was the theme that Benjamin Britten used for his Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra, which you hear quoted at the end.
Ah, I see. So was that a synthesized version of it?
No, okay. That was the real thing.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds like a synthesizer version of it. But anyway, what was I asking you? What did I want to ask you? Where have you just come back from?
I just came back from New York. I was in New York for about a week, and I was dispatched there because I'm working. One of my non-compositional projects is I'm the editor of a website, a worldwide website, which is sponsored by the Other Minds Festival, Other Minds Festival here in San Francisco. And one of the things that we're doing as part of that site is not, strictly speaking, an Other Minds-related thing, but it's a memorial page for Nicholas Slonimsky, composer, critic, and musical lexicographer who died on last Christmas at the age of 101. And his daughter, granddaughter, and grandson all live in New York area. They have a lot of his personal effects, which they let me sort of get my hands on, including a guest book of his, which is a fantastic document. It spans about 20 years, and, you know, all these incredible people, you know, came through his household and signed it. So I was there scanning that. Also, I had a chance to go to some of the Lincoln Center Festival. Heard world premiere of a piece for Gagaku by Lois Virk. That was a tremendous piece. and a great performance of these Vietnamese water puppets. That was really beautiful. And
what are water puppets?
Well, it's they're kind of large puppets, maybe, I don't know, a foot or maybe even a little more, puppets made out of wood that are actually the whole theater is set up in a kind of a pond, and there's a stage and a curtain, and the puppeteers are behind the curtain. You don't see them, and they, through these rods and levers and things, control these wooden puppets, which are in front of the curtain, and they do these incredible tricks. It's almost like a magic act. I mean, they swim, they dance, they walk around, they blow fire, they fish, they ride in boats. You know, it's really incredible. The kind of the virtuosity of the puppeteers, and it's just so, it's so nice and so gentle. It was a troupe from Hanoi, and it was sort of funny. They after the thing was over, you know, people were very enthusiastic and clapping a lot, but they only came out for a second, and then you see them all sort of run away. And I was like, well, why are they running away? And then as the audience dispersed and you start to walk out, you see them all. Peopling these souvenir stands that they had set up, and they're selling, their, you know, getting some good hard currency to take back to Hanoi.
So you mean they didn't have people selling, they had to run back.
They had to go do their own,
everything.
Yeah. But it was very, very nice with live music, you know, which was wonderful. And what else did I see there? A concert under the direction of Tan Dun, the Chinese composer who's lived in New York for the last 10 years or so, of music by Asian composers who are either living in the West or trained in the West. Concert, I must say, rather unsuccessful concert by Todd Machover.
Oh, I read a review of that. Is that the new opera thing?
Well, he had two things on. One was the so-called Bahrain opera, is more like an interactive installation, which I didn't get a chance to see. It got a really bad review in the New York Times. And then
it doesn't sound like something I really want to go to, you know.
Well, then he also had a concert, which is sort of your, you know, kind of straight-ahead concert with, you know, virtuoso players up on stage and a lot of computers, mm-hmm. And then us in the audience. And as a person who's been troubled from time to time by my own technical problems on stage, I don't mean to gloat, but when you bring that much technology up, you know, something's bound to go wrong. And in this case, the technology all worked fine, but the cellist broke a string. No, first thing that happened was they get up there and the cellist starts playing, nothing happens, you know, and they spent about 10 minutes trying to figure out what was wrong, and they hadn't plugged something in.
Uh-oh.
That was, you know, classic mistake number one. Classic mistake number two is when the cellist string broke. So, but aside from that, I don't know, the music just was, it didn't really have, considering the tools at Machover's disposal, one would hope for just a little more clarity in terms of either the compositional vision or just the sound itself, but it's all just kind of a mush.
Well, the thing is that it's all very well to be up on the technology and have the technology, but you know that the art comes first, and if you know, you can use very, very simple technology and come out with a piece that's heartbreakingly, breathtakingly wonderful. And all the technology in the world isn't going to make you a better composer.
Well, I have no disagreement with that. No, I completely agree.
You know, it's nice to use all the stuff, but there's got to be, you know, it's got to be something there to start. You should be able to just, you know, like all the composers, the composers in France and whatever that were using simple tape recorders and razor blades, and you know, Berio, and just go back anywhere you want. We're using very, very simple methods and breathtaking results.
No argument for me.
Anyhow, so here we are editorializing our heads off. And we did forget to mention Tim Perkis is doing a bunch of stuff, including Tuesday, August 13th, John Zorn's Cobra Ensemble at Slim's, 333 9th Street. And that sounds very mega and very fun. And Slim's is a great venue.
My understanding is that John Zorn himself will be leading the ensemble, doing the prompting.
That sounds great.
Willie Winant is kind of putting the group together, and in addition to Tim Perkins, there'll be some other special guests.
And Wednesday, August 23rd, Rododote, which is a really good group, Ron Haglin, Tom Nunn, Doug Carroll, and Tim Perkis, along with Lyle Ellis Ensemble. That's at Venue 9 that we mentioned. You can email Tim at timper, T-I-M-P-E-R, at artifact.com for more information. So, what shall we listen to now, Carl?
Ooh.
Well, we're going to listen to Tombouri.
Yeah, why not? Sort of move ahead
a
decade.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, you did. Very good. You move ahead about a decade, and sampling has now arrived, and this is one of my early sample pieces. This is actually created on the commission from the Museum of Contemporary Art in Los Angeles, where I used to live, and for their radio series called The Territory of Art.
Tombouri. So what are some of the sources of that? Laotian folk tune?
Yeah, the beginning is a Laotian folk tune. A lot of the stuff is just sampled off of the...
Tombouri. So what are some of the sources of that? Laotian folk tune?
Yeah, the beginning is a Laotian folk tune. A lot of the stuff is just sampled off of these cheap cassettes, you know, sort of street cassettes that I picked up while traveling in Southeast Asia. And then the center section with those guys sort of, well, it's a kind of a proto-rap, I guess.
In the traffic.
Yeah, that's all basically the sound of a jitney conductor in Bangkok. A kid who sort of hangs out at the back of, it's basically like a converted pickup truck. That
you're all squashed
around.
Into it.
Yeah.
Really fun.
Yeah. And this is the kid who, he sort of collects the fares and calls out where it's going and what the stops are. And I don't know what else he says, because I, when this piece came out, I got an irate letter from a Thai professor in, I think, Iowa, who was very upset that I had apparently sampled a particularly rude expression, as he called it, and repeated it over and over again.
But he wouldn't tell you what it meant.
No, he didn't.
He was too shy.
Yeah.
Too shy.
Then the last section is some Chinese erhu music, that also from a particularly poor quality cassette.
So we had a caller who wistfully said, this isn't going to be released either, and that's exactly what I had been saying to Carl. So
actually, you know, I realize now that it is available in cassette form. I don't know if it's still available, but it may be. Through the Museum of Contemporary Art in Los Angeles, they put their series, The Territory of Art, out as a cassette release, and this segment is part of that. And so, if you really want it, and you don't mind a cassette, and you want to get it soon, you might write to Mocha and ask about The Territory of Art. And this program is called Tonbury.
Thon. B-U-R-I.
Right.
So one thing I forgot, that at Radio Valencia Saturday night, that's 1199 Valencia at 23rd in San Francisco, Glenn Spearman Double Trio, The Fields CD release party with Larry Oakes, Chris Brown, Lyle Ellis, William Wynant, Donald Robinson. So that sounds worth catching, too.
Indeed.
Yes, just lots happening. That's really nice to see. So, yeah, that should be very neat, Saturday the 3rd. Forgot
you might,
about that.
Barbara, maybe you could mention again, because it was almost an hour ago, that you've got your thing coming up next Tuesday.
That's true. Why don't you say it, so I don't have to be so self-serving.
Oh, well, let's see if I got my facts straight. It's next Tuesday, starting at 8:30.
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, okay, at the Hotel Utah, which is 4th and Bryant in San Francisco. And it's a CD release party for the Wig Band.
It's called Lick Me to Heaven.
Lick Me to Heaven. And it should be fun.
Should be a blast.
If the CD ever comes out.
If the CD ever comes out. But we're going to have fun anyway. No, the CD will be... there, definitely. And it's only $5.
Great.
And it's really a bargain.
For a worthy cause. And my understanding is that after Wig Band finishes, the second half of the evening features Phil Gelb on shakuhachi, in from Florida, Mia Masaoka, local
Koto player. Koto mistress.
Koto mistress.
Chris Brown, the keyboard maven.
And who else? Lyle Ellis? Is he in the band?
On Tuesday, I don't know, a Dark Circle. Well, it says, and Friends also. So I think it may very well be.
He might qualify as a friend. Mm. So there you are.
So you are listening to KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno. This is Crack with Dawn. I'm Barb. And Carl Stone has generously given of his time, his very busy schedule, to be here with us this morning, this Friday morning, and we're really having a nice time. We've perked up a bit. We've perked up quite a bit from midnight. It's remarkable.
The jasmine tea helped.
But we don't drink it in the studio. No, no.
No, no, absolutely not.
Never. Okay, so what's up next?
Well, I thought, again, sort of moving forward in time.
Cooking Papa.
Cooking Papa.
Is that a name of a restaurant?
No, it's not. Because it's a subsection from a larger work which is named after a restaurant. You see, the whole thing is completely stupid. And it's basically just, as you might understand, I use this whole system of naming pieces after restaurants simply as an arbitrary system for titling pieces. There's no relationship, and you know.
Well, it's more fun than numbers.
It is more fun than numbers, and in the beginning, well, you know, I'm basically naming after my favorite restaurants, and they used to be sort of tended to be Asian, Thai, Vietnamese. You know, with kind of names that sounded exotic at least to Western ears, and sort of inscrutable, if you will. But now, as my taste has broadened a little bit, you find more like, you know, Southern barbecue places coming in. Anyway, so the whole composition of this is...
Your next piece is going to be called Everett and Jones?
I have a piece called Everett and Jones. It's not... I did it back...
It's supposed to be a joke.
No, it's true. I have a piece called Everett and Jones. I don't have a piece called Flint's, because Flint's isn't as good as it used to be.
No, we were just talking about that. Everett and Jones is... Fruitvale is ruling for me now.
I have a piece... Well, Mom's... which some people may know because it's also the title tune from my CD on New Albion. Mom's is a barbecue place in South Central Los Angeles. And Kamiya Bar is this kind of low-down and funky place in Tokyo, in the so-called downtown area of Tokyo. But it is kind of a suite, and each movement merited a title, but it seemed kind of, I don't know, like you were going to be sort of recursively nesting restaurants within restaurants, which I didn't want to do. So, but I did need a similarly arbitrary system for titling. So, I went down to Kinokuniya, the local Japanese bookstore, and I just looked through all the Japanese magazines and manga, you know, comic book out on the racks. And so, I just picked names that struck my fancy. So, you have names like Young Jump, Cooking Papa, Guild. These are all magazine titles. Let's see what other titles I forget.
So this is the whole CD is Kamiya Bar.
Kamiya Bar, yes. It's Kamiya Bar is the name of the entire.
And this is available like a tower or places?
I don't know about tower.
Amoeba?
But it should be available at Amoeba. It should be in the East Bay.
Okay.
Aquarius Records in San Francisco seems to stock my stuff. Tower, you know, if you want to drop by Tower and ask the salespeople, hey, where's the Carl Stone section, that would be fine. Can't guarantee you will get results.
By the way, I had forgotten to ask you before, are you going to be performing in town soon?
I don't have any plans in town at the moment, no. I'm woodshedding this summer and then heading out. I don't play locally all that much. I'll be doing some work in Europe in September and on the East Coast.
That June Watanabe piece you did, though, was the piece for June Watanabe Dancers was wonderful.
Mm, thank you.
I really like that. That was a very, very rainy night, and it was very hard to get out, to get to that. And then everybody who was there was just so enthralled, you know.
And wet.
And wet. You just forgot the rain, though, and everything. Of course, I did lose my umbrella then. I left my umbrella there, and it was gone. It's gone. But anyway. Who cares? So we hear Cooking Baba from... Now,
Kamiobara is all based on sounds recorded in and around Tokyo. I sort of wandered around with a portable DAT machine and a one-point stereo mic and just gathered a lot of sounds that fascinated me. And this particular section features, amongst other things, radio and television textures, sounds of a chindonya, which is a group of itinerant musicians. It's very similar to klezmer music, as a matter of fact. It's a very interesting point. They use percussion, clarinet, saxophone, trumpet sometimes, and sounds very similar to klezmer music, and some other stuff mixed in as well.